Good morning, happy Friday, and welcome. At this time, we'll convene the California Coastal Commission. Ms. Miller, please call the roll.
Commissioner Amenzada.
Here.
Commissioner Brownsey.
Present.
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
Here.
Commissioner Ketchum.
Here.
Commissioner Luevano.
Here.
Commissioner Peskin.
Present.
Commissioner Sundberg.
Here.
Commissioner Uranga.
Present.
Vice Chair Padilla.
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Ainsworth, agenda changes. Ms. Detmer.
Good morning, commissioners. So first, if anyone in the audience wishes to address the commission today, please fill out a speaker slip that you can find on the table in the back of the room. And also, this is the time to turn off or put in quiet mode your cell phone, so to not disturb the proceedings today. We very much appreciate that. So now turning to agenda changes for today. I'm going to start with item 9B, which is the Rutter application. Move to consent. Items 12A and 13A, which is a combined report, which is the Southern Cross Cable Networks application. Move to consent. We have also moved item 13B, which is the Sandag item, to consent. Item 13C, which is the Corps of Engineers consistency determination, moved to consent. And finally, we're able to move items 14A through D, which is the permit amendments by Hog Island, to the consent calendar. And that concludes agenda changes for today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, and welcome. At this time, the commission will take a general public comment. I do have a few requests to address the commission under public comment. When I call your name, please come forward, state your name again for the record, and your time will be limited to 3 minutes. Mark Fudge. Welcome.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Mark Fudge. I have a simple request, but I think it's going to be a little bit hard to put into action. Time and time again, I find myself looking at the LCP for Laguna Beach and trying to make a determination if it's certified code or non-certified code, if it's up to date. The problem is, unlike many areas where I can go and find the legislation or the ordinance or whatnot, the certified code is not readily available. The commission does not have a copy that they can provide. The city of Laguna Beach does not have a copy they can provide. And I'd like to have it. It would save a great deal of time. I think it is a condition that's same in many LCPs up and down the state.
What is that?
And so I need to open a dialogue how I might be able to help get this done, so that a member of the public can go in and actually take a look at what is certified LCP for the city of Laguna Beach or for any other municipality that has an LCP. I don't know what the process is. I'm willing to work with any parameters to make it happen. I'll devote my time, energy, and money to help, but it can't continue as it is. So if there's some discussion from staff or from the commission how we might facilitate getting a LCP that I can take a look at and any other member of the public can take a look at, so we're all playing on an even field. It's the rules of the game, and unfortunately, the public and myself, we generally don't have a copy, and it puts us at a significant disadvantage. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to any comments you might have how I can participate in resolving this in Laguna Beach and anywhere else in the state for that matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Ray? Mr. Ray will be followed by Mr. Jim Wagner. Good morning. I understand that you have Ms. Kuntz are ceding time to you.
No, I'm not as tall as Mark Fudge. So. Yes, sir, that's correct.
All right, then. Your time will be limited to 6 minutes. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and honorable commissioners and staff. I'm Steve Ray of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. I'm here this morning due to an issue that has kind of been ongoing before the commission for a while now. There have been a group of us that have come and spoken to the commission about the dune habitats on Newport Beach and the snowy plover, western snowy plover birds, the protected species that are located there, as well as the California lease terns, which are located in two preserves right next to that area, and do forage in that dune habitat area as well. And that is down where the Santa Ana River hits the Pacific Ocean, right between Newport Beach, Costa Mesa, and Huntington Beach. And I'm here about another matter relative to that, which just came to our attention literally just a couple of days ago. I received a copy of a letter from the Coastal Commission staff to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers dated September 28, 2018. And this was, the subject is a negative determination ND-00333-18. Again, that's ND-00333-18. It's called the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Program, Stage 13, Orange County. Now, while it says the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Program, it's like, well, what is the connection to Newport Beach and the dunes and the snowy plover on Newport Beach? Well, in reading it, you find out that this is a negative declaration for the Surfside Sunset Beach Nourishment Program, but it also includes a sand relocation project on Newport Beach, which is not part of the title, and therefore it's a little misleading once you read down in and find out that it also includes Newport Beach. What it involves is what's called backpassing, and that is moving sand from one place to another, approximately 100,000 cubic yards of sand from a section of beach immediately south of the Santa Ana River down coast to the Newport Beach groin field. It's a 10-foot thick layer of sand will be removed from a 3,800-foot long borrow site, that means where you take the sand from, encompassing 16 acres between 71st Street and 56th Street, and it will be transported by truck to a 2,200-foot long beach disposal site between 32nd Street and 44th Street. The proposed fill area is 40 feet wide and extends from the existing top of the slope to approximately 0 feet mean lower low water tide area. And it's supposed to start in October. In Newport Beach, it says it will last approximately 30 days with equipment operating between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., 7 days a week. Now, it also notes in here that the California lease terns, western snowy plover, California brown pelican, and California grunin potentially occur within the project area. But we're not sure whether they have identified that as just the Sunset's Surfside Beach area, or whether that also includes Newport Beach. But there is a clue here. It says, as part of this project, the Corps will employ snowy plover-focused monitoring of work activities since the species is known to roost on Surfside Sunset Beach. No mention of Newport Beach. We know, of course, as we have documented many, many times here, that the western snowy plover occurs on Newport Beach and in the sand dune habitat there, and that in the Newport Beach certified LCP, as we've made the commission aware many times, those dunes are identified as Esha, and the western snowy plover are specifically identified as birds in need of protection within that dune area. This project is going to occur directly in that dune habitat area with the western snowy plovers, and the trucks, it says in here, that are going to be hauling the dirt are going to be driving right down the beach. Now, we have brought documentation to the commission about the impact on the western snowy plovers, specifically even that, you know, dead birds have been found in the tire tracks of the lifeguards when they go up and down the beach. So we're very concerned about the habitat there and what is going to happen to the dunes. Are the dunes going to be dug up? There's no mention of anything like this in this letter. The staff, as a staff function, granted the certification consistency with federal certification for the negative declaration for this project. Public was not aware of it. I just, you know, had this sent to me just a couple of days ago. So we will be looking into this. I would hope that the dune habitat and the western snowy plovers who exist there will be recognized in this project and will be preserved. We will be certainly following up with staff about this and monitoring it to make sure that those habitats and the birds are protected. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. William McHenry, followed by Jim Wagner. Good morning.
Hi, William McHenry. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Three Captains hoist installation. It was up, I think, a couple days ago, but was postponed. But since the location is here, I couldn't pass up the opportunity. We submitted our comments electronically and provided copies. We know it's postponed, but I'd like to take the opportunity to speak. This comment is behalf on Pillar Point Seafoods, Morningstar Fisheries, and commercial fishermen and markets that these businesses serve. We are 2 to 3 fish-buying tenants that operate on Johnson Pier. We are active commercial fishermen that have families that have been fishing from Pillar Point Harbor for generations. As stakeholders and tenants, we have been following issues surrounding this Three Captains hoist closely since 2014 and have consistently raised concerns about the impacts of a hoist installation in this already congested location. We appreciate the work that the Coastal Commission staff has done on this. However, the staff report for this item does not accurately reflect our experience or the current status of this issue at Pillar Point Harbor. We understand why this can seem complicated. We recently realized that only the applicant, one San Mateo County Harbor District Commissioner, and ourselves have been following this since the beginning and are still associated with Pillar Point Harbor. But we are still here, and this is a very important issue. We have laid out some information in our written comments, but I wanted to share some highlights in an effort to simplify things a little. On April 15, 2014, Three Captains installed a hoist on Johnson Pier without notice, public process, or adequate permits in the same location. Since then, commercial fishing organizations, fish buying tenants, harbor commissioners, and others consistently requested a transparent process and independent studies to understand how this hoist would be installed and operate in a manner that allowed public access, maintained public safety, and did not negatively impact neighboring businesses or the commercial fishing fleet. As I stand here today, we still have not seen any specific documentation or plans that answered the basic questions that we have been asking for the last 5 years. We also believe that this installation is in violation of our existing leases, which designates this specific area of this proposed hoist installation as a common area that must be kept clear unless mutually agreed upon all parties, which clearly we don't agree to. I do want to clarify that we are not opposed to Three Captains having a second hoist. We all have worked together for years and have the same languages in our leases. We simply want the pier to operate efficiently, fairly, and most importantly, safety for all. We believe that is the duty of the San Mateo County Harbor District and the California Coastal Commission to make sure that happens. Therefore, we respectfully request that the California Coastal Commission require a comprehensive and holistic plan for the terminus of Johnson Pier to be completed and approved by the San Mateo County Harbor District prior to considering or approving a hoist installation for Three Captains or any other tenant. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Wagner, followed by Judy Taylor. Mr. Wagner, please restate your name again for the record, and your time will be limited to 3 minutes. Welcome.
Good morning. Excuse me. My name is Jim Wagner. I've been a mortgage broker in Pacifica for over 30 years. And as such, I interact with people and work with people in probably what is their largest investment they will ever make in their lives. And it's stressful for them, but we get through it. And we continue on, and they live their life, and they raise their children in their home. Now, loans are relatively simple products. You need basically three things. You need income, credit, and collateral. And that is where it starts to get interesting, because if the collateral is threatened, your ability to get a loan becomes threatened. Lenders and bondholders rely on that collateral to secure their loans. If there are items that threaten that, they take that into account. And just, I would hope that the commission takes that under advisement when they look at these LCPs that are running up and down the coast. It's very important. Insurance is integral to the process. You have to have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you can't get the loan. Now, we've seen California wildfire areas have problems getting insurance, and they end up paying premiums for the insurance that they can find. Now, I would hate to see any areas along the coast side in California that become designated some kind of specific area that creates costs for the homeowners that they have not anticipated. Now, one of the other things that we see going on is cities finance a lot of their projects with muni bonds. And muni bonds are collateralized by assets of that city. Well, Pacifica, for instance, has 80% of their municipal utilities and buildings west of Highway 1. Now, I'm concerned with the possibility, draconian as it may be, that if policies are put in place that threaten the bondholders and the underwriters' underlying investments, those bonds could be called, and that could be devastating. So I ask the commission to please consider all the unintended consequences that may be a result of what is final and comes out of this body. And we really need some more public input. There's a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders that have not been heard from, bondholders, lenders, and insurance companies. Thank you.
Thank you. Judy Taylor will be followed by Suzanne Drake.
Good morning, Commissioners, and welcome to Half Moon Bay. You've heard me say this before, and I'm here because it cannot be stressed enough. The Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance is going into an entire new arena in American government. In the past, when properties have been taken, there has been some sort of human volition involved. You know, we decide to build a road, decide to build a dam, that sort of thing. What we're dealing with climate change goes way beyond that. And even without climate change, we are already losing buildings. Pacifica's lost buildings. We've lost buildings. Last year, the early iteration of the Ritz-Carlton had its piers exposed and those piers had to be taken out. When the framers of the Constitution decided to do this experiment, the consistency in what they did was that for the most part, things are rational and they're fair. They talked about what are the freedoms that we have in order for society to stay stable over time, and how do we make sure that the costs and the benefits of society are distributed as equitably as possible. What is happening with climate change goes beyond that. And what you guys are doing, the Coastal Commission was the first experiment in doing regional planning with this sensitive environmental geography. You have now been copied around the world. This thing with the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance is putting us into a whole new arena where the protection of private property rights is not going to be something that we can choose. Those are going to be sacrificed. It's a reality. And what you do in this process is going to be copied the same way your basic structure has been copied. And it is so important that you get it right. We've been saying this over and over and over again, and I know that the adaptation has been pushed out. I don't know where it is in the process, but I do know that my compadres in the mortgage industry have not been consulted. The people in the disclosure industry have not been consulted. Communities need to grapple with this now. You've done a basic structure. Send it back to the local communities so that communities can begin to understand what this is going to mean to them over time. Get feedback from those communities as to what needs to go into this document. Then adopt it. Please do not do it prematurely, and please take the time to get it done right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Suzanne Drake, followed by Barbara LeVay. Please state your name again for the record. Your time is limited to 3 minutes.
Hi, Suzanne Drake here.
Hang on, just suspend for just 1 sec. They're going to give you some assistance here. Okay. You're good. Hold on one sec.
Hello.
Thank you and welcome.
Hi. Suzanne Drake here. I'm basically coming to you as a working person representing the working people in this community. I'm painting today, so as you can see, I'm not dressed up like some of the other folks here. Bottom line is that working people don't really have an opportunity to come to these meetings, so I'm basically representative of my community, and that is the coast. I'm an owner of 3 properties here in California, 2 of which are on the coast, 1 in Pacifica, 1 here in El Granada. The residential adaptation policy guidance plan that y'all have kind of structured and set up has a lot of unknowns. Obviously, some of my colleagues here have addressed the fact that the mortgage industry hasn't been consulted, insurance hasn't been consulted, and frankly, a lot of my neighbors don't have any clue of what's going on. I think that public comment is really lacking in this process. I mean, you're missing working people like me. Why? Because they're working. They're out there. You need to have, in every single city and county, meetings to explain these crazy long jargon documents that you got. You know, there's a lot of legalese and stuff that people don't understand. Regular people. People that you are making decisions on behalf of that are potentially, because there's so many holes, unknowns, potentially they're going to lose out. Things are going to be expensive, or even they're just going to lose their property altogether. So you're making decisions on behalf of these people, and they don't have a clue of what's going on, and they don't understand. I highly suggest that there's a lot of holes in this program and a lot of industries that need to be consulted. So we need to get in there and get input from these other industries. And secondly, y'all need to come to each and every town, each and every county, and actually have public hearings and explain to people what's going on. Instead of handing out, like, you know, a 100-page document, expecting people to understand it, put yourself in people's shoes, the working man's shoes. Come at night, preferably, when people aren't working, number one. Number two, come and actually explain what's going on. So I want to put that on your agenda list in the future. So please, you're making decisions on behalf of the rest of us. I think the more information and the more input that you have, the better off you'll be. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Drake. Barbara LeVay, followed by Roy Stotz.
This isn't too low. Just, there we go. Good morning. Thank you for coming to Half Moon Bay. This is very convenient for us little locals. I met you down in Scotts Valley and then again in San Francisco, and I'll echo the same sentiments that my friends here have said. They said it pretty well. But And I'll echo what I've said before. This document, the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance, 95 pages. It's thick and dense and technical. And I know what I'm reading. I slow it down. I try to absorb it. And still, it ties my brains in knots, trying to follow each word. And what does that mean? Because it seems so contradictory. Just in all in one sentence. So I say, yes, please bring a meeting to Half Moon Bay. Let's have a meeting here in Half Moon Bay. Let's make sure I'll help get the neighbors on board. We can have focus groups. We've talked about that before. Just so that people do understand what's coming to their towns. And I would love to know that it's happening up and down the coast, because we do talk to those other counties, and it's like a sleeping giant, and it has huge implications. And it would be so sad to see that it would be adopted, and then people wake up and realize what has been done. I don't think that that's what your intentions are, but let's do it right. Let's do it in a timely fashion. Let's make sure that as many people are notified and have their chance to speak on behalf of, or at least try to understand this technical document. And I think that's all I have to say today. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming to Half Moon Bay.
Thank you. Roy Stotz, forgive me if I mispronounced that, followed by Gina Zari. Welcome. Please state your name again for the record. You have 3 minutes.
So, my name is Roy Stotz. I'm a 40-year resident and property owner in Pacifica. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. And if it were not for a few colleagues of mine calling me about the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance, I wouldn't even know that it existed. And after learning more about this and reading through just a few pages of it, it's come to my attention that there's a tremendous amount of unintended consequences in this. I'm sure that you must have our best interests in mind. However, the unintended consequences of on the ability to buy and sell homes is tremendous. As we've seen in other areas, lenders are very cautious, and they have been since 2006, 2008, during the last Great Recession, where a lot of lenders lost a lot of money. And it's very difficult to get loans as it is right now. I'm sure it's not your intention to make all properties in the vulnerability area ineligible for lending, but that's precisely what the Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance will do. In addition, those property owners in a vulnerability zone may have their insurance dropped or curtailed once the maps are made available. This represents two of the basic and most major problems with the draft as it currently stands. And this, unfortunately, is just the tip of the iceberg. I implore you to hold community meetings in each and every local area that's going to be affected by this, because in Pacifica especially, we will be directly affected, and yet very few people actually know about the existence of this plan and the fact that at some point in the near future, you may adapt it and put it in place as it currently exists. It's only through this process that you'll be able to
Sorry, followed by Norman Schwab. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. Thank you for coming to Half Moon Bay. I'll keep this brief because I've visited you before in different places in the state. The Residential Adaptation Policy Guidance is an extremely important document, as I'm sure you all know. I can't think of a single coastal document more widespread and impactful than it will become in the future. I think it's critical, as you've heard from some of our colleagues, that people understand what it means, what it will do, and that all of the unintended consequences are fleshed out. As you know, a document of this magnitude is something that will have tremendous impacts to homeowners. Working in real estate and representing real estate in the San Mateo County Association of Realtors, we have a unique perspective on how this document and the guidelines might actually impact lending, insurance, the purchasing and selling of homes, and it's significant. There is the possibility, there is the the chance that it will prevent the sale of homes, that insurance will be dropped. That's very real. And I know you've heard from a few mortgage professionals prior appearances that explained about the fires in Napa. This is real. The fact that people might not be able to get insurance, their collateral might be worth considerably less, if not completely lost, is a reality. So I just implore you to please hold meetings in each city and county. Please discuss and explain this document, and please listen to those professionals that really understand more than I do, more than even some of my colleagues do, the mortgage professionals, the lenders, the disclosure folks, the title company experts. Listen to what they have to say about the consequences, and let's make this document something that can stand up as an example and can be replicated throughout the country and throughout the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Norman Schwab.
I'm Norman Schwab. Good morning, commissioners. Thanks for being here. I want to speak to the issue of erosion control. I am a homeowner and I run a small business here in Princeton. And the areas that are not protected by riprap continue to erode. And in some cases, they affect the roads themselves and the access to the beach. And specifically on Columbia Avenue, guests of mine used to, and families, to be able to walk down to the beach. And now we got to go all the way down Princeton to other streets to get down. Most areas are protected, but some specific areas aren't, and I think that the rules that prevent protection of infrastructure and homes are detrimental to the future of this community. So I'd like to speak in favor of allowing control of some of that erosion in areas that are developed, such as the harbor here. That's all. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Schwab. Is there anyone else present that would like to address the commission under general public comment? Seeing no one come forward, we will move on to North Coast District. Oh, forgive me. I apologize. I do have a request to make comment by briefly from two commissioners, Commissioner Brownsey, followed by Commissioner Amanzada.
Thank you, Chair. I want to address the issues raised by the folks on the residential adaptation policy. I think it's very important that you came to address us today. But I think what I want to do is share some background that may provide some understanding in terms of the motivation and the objective of this policy document. First, it's not the commission that's going to cause the market disruptions. It is, in fact, climate change. And it is our recognition of the value and the importance of your residential properties, of people's businesses, of local governments' investments in infrastructure that drove the project to lay out a plan for local communities, which, as all of you know, are extremely diverse. Our coastal communities are extremely diverse up and down this state. And the idea was to say, here's a planning document. We want you to take it back to your local governments, whether it's a municipality or a county board of supervisors or any other entity, planning division, have a community education and community discussion, and then formulate your local plan so that your homeowners, your business owners, your local officials have some comprehension of what actions they may or may not take in response to climate change. The intent of this document is not to mandate to people how they should make these decisions. It's to say, please be aware. We know how important this is to you, personally or commercially or as a community in terms of your investment in infrastructure. Look at these elements and formulate your community response. I just want to underscore, it is our belief and our commitment and our value that it is in respect of all the points that you made that's driving this policy, and that the intent was really to provoke conversation and discussion, to get people's attention before we're just dealing with the crisis of the consequences. We don't want, we're trying in a chaotic situation to manage consequences that we've never had to address before. It puts, this is a state of California problem. The commission is working with all our sister agencies as a state, as a partner with our local communities, as representatives of the public to address these issues. So I want to encourage you, and in the strongest possible terms, to continue to follow this issue, to talk to your local officials, to be involved. And yes, I read that document. I read the entire thing. And believe me, I can't tell you how many cups of coffee I drank. But the point was, is that it was providing checklists to local governments and to homeowners. It was providing background information. It was really trying to say, here's a roadmap to all the kinds of things that at this point in time may change in the future. At this point in time, we're aware of, we're taking notice of, science is telling us we need to really pay attention to. So truly, I want you to understand that we are doing this because we understand the importance of the issue, we understand the value, we understand people's families' wealth and concerns and income and well-being. So participate in this process. If you think that there are parts of that report that could be more understandable, call our commission staff. They'd be very responsive. And the commission has offered to come to different regions, to come to different communities and do town halls. But really, it's your local government and you who should be having that conversation. We hope that you do. We look forward to hearing what you have to say. And I hope that this provided you some background information. Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. And that's very valuable, Commissioner, and I'm grateful. And before we go further, I just want to provide some clarification and remind respectfully my colleagues as well as the public. The commission is generally limited in its ability to really discuss at length an item that is addressed under public comment because it's not noticed and not part of the agenda. So if we're going to provide information that's beneficial to the public, request that staff follow up with the speaker who spoke under a general comment, provide them with information, or give specific direction to come back as a follow-up. But I want to be careful that we're not running afoul of I can see our general counsel over there getting nervous already. So just to my colleagues, respectfully, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, for helping the public understand. But for future, when we want to make a comment on general public comment, we really have to limit ourselves to clarification or giving a request of staff for follow-up. To contact the person who's spoken under general comment, but we can't really discuss or deliberate on an item because it's technically not on the agenda. So with having said that, Commissioner Amanzada.
Thank you. I just want to make two brief comments on two different issues that speakers raised. And first of all, I want to thank everybody for coming to public comment and raising really valuable issues. It's been a lot of really hearty discussion, although it sounds like some of it may be somewhat outside the scope of what's intended. First, I just wanted to address the comment that was made about working people attending the meetings and having access to these meetings, and just to say that we certainly see that issue and that we are actively addressing it in our latest version of the environmental justice policy, which is now out for comment. So we really hear that perspective and are actively working to address it. So thank you for raising that. And then I wanted to go back to Mr. Fudge's comment and request to staff and just see if we are able to accommodate his request. I thought both of the Fudges raised some really valuable issues yesterday with respect to the Laguna LCP, and just want to see how we might be able to address it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we can provide what constitutes a certified LCP to Mr. Fudge. And this has been an issue up and down the coast. The way our LCPs have evolved over time with multiple amendments, so there's multiple documents that constitute that. So it's hard to put them in a real comprehensive form, but we can do that. One of the things that we've been working on is what's known as our digital LCP project that was federally funded. In order to put these in a digital form that is accessible to everyone and that are updated when there's an LCP amendment. So we have that very accessible LCP, because it is frustrating for the public and even for staff, quite frankly, to have to thumb through these paper documents that are multiple amendments and things. So it's a problem we're working on, and we would certainly work with Mr. Fudge to provide him that, because we're all about accessible government, and that's who we are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Ainsworth. I assume that brings us to North Coast District.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Item 5A is an administrative application for the Noyo Harbor District to replace approximately 30,000 square feet of decking on the district's high dock in Noyo Harbor along the Mendocino coast just south of Fort Bragg. We've received no comments and are aware of no controversy involving this item, and the applicant is in support of the staff-issued permit. We're reporting it to you today, and unless four commissioners request that the permit not be approved administratively, the permit will become effective. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. Are there any ex partes with respect to this item? Hearing none, is there any objection to unanimous consent? Consent, yes, forgive me. Blind. Without objection, we consent. Administrative calendar is adopted.
So that brings us to item 6, which is the Deputy Director's Report for the North Coast, which was posted online. Contains two permit waivers, a permit time extension, and an emergency permit waiver. Again, we're aware of no opposition or controversy regarding these items, and we're seeking the Commission's concurrence with the staff determinations to grant the approvals and to find that the emergency waiver complies with the requirements of the Coastal Act.
Thank you. Are there any ex parte with respect to this item? Hearing none, is there any objection to unanimous concurrence? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
Item 7 is the North Coast Consent Calendar. As Allison noted during her summary of the agenda changes, there is one North Coast item that's been moved to the Consent Calendar, which is Item 9B, the Rudder Permit Application. This application is for additions and other improvements to an existing single-family residence on Driftwood Lane north of the city of Trinidad. The Commission has received correspondence on this application, including one that raises concerns. An email from Dave and Bonnie Etz has been posted with this item on the Commission's website. The Etzes are neighbors of the applicant and raise concerns about private view blockage. While the project may indeed affect their view, staff has determined that the development will not adversely affect public views, as the house is on the inland side of the road that serves the area, and the main through public road is screened from view of the development by forest vegetation. So therefore, we continue to recommend that you approve the permit with the conditions listed in the staff report under the consent calendar. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes with respect to this item? I do. For the record, we have a request to speak from Mr. John Rudder. He indicates represents the applicant and indicates he is here for questions only. Would there be a desire on the part of the commission? Mr. Rudder, do you want to make testimony or just respond to questions? Are any commissioners wanting to ask? If there are any. Okay. And for the record, that was Mr. Rudder indicating he's available to respond for questions. Any questions? All right, we don't have any other speakers on this application. Does anyone present wish to address the commission on this application? If not, we'll bring it to the commission. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. That was Mr. Howell and Ms. Luevano. Is there anyone wishing to address the motion? Any objection to unanimous approval? Hearing none, the motion passes. The resolution and findings are adopted. Thank you.
That brings us, to item 8A, the City of Trinidad CAL FIRE LCP Amendment Certification Review. And this item involves concurrence with the Executive Director's determination that the action of the City of Trinidad to accept the Commission's certification of the amendment with suggested modifications is legally adequate. The Commission acted on this amendment back in September in Fort Bragg. The amendment amends the City's land use plan to allow for an extension of water service from the City's municipal water system to the CAL FIRE station located in the unincorporated rural area north of town. We believe the actions of the council to accept the modifications and implement the changes to the land use plan are legally adequate, and we're recommending that the commission concur with this determination.
Move concurrence.
All right. Any for the record, are there any ex parties on this item? Anything contained in the report? There are none. Any objection? Unanimous concurrence. Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Item 8B is another certification review of an LCP amendment, and this is related to the previous item. 8B involves concurrence with regard to a Humboldt County LCP amendment to accept the Commission's certification to allow for the same extension of the water line into the rural area of the county. We also believe in this case the actions of the Board of Supervisors to accept the modifications are legally adequate, and we're recommending that the Commission concur with its determination.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes with respect to this item? Seeing none, is there an objection to unanimous concurrence? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
So that brings us to item 8C, which is an extension of processing time for the Humboldt County LCP amendment to add a cannabis ordinance to the certified LCP. And this amendment application consists of three parts, including Part A, which amends regulations related to indoor use for personal indoor cultivation for personal use and regulations for outdoor cultivation for personal use. Part B adds regulations governing facilities in the retail distribution of cannabis. And Part C adds regulations for commercial activities associated with cultivation, processing, manufacturing, and wholesale distribution of cannabis. Without an extension of the deadline, the Commission would have to act on the LCP amendment at today's meeting. The counties revised the proposed implementation plan amendment multiple times since first submitting the application in December of 2016, transforming the ordinance from dealing solely with medical cannabis activities to an ordinance dealing also with recreational cannabis activities after the state initiative was adopted to legalize adult recreational marijuana activities. While we have been working closely with county staff and on the proposed amendments, we have not yet had sufficient time to complete the analysis of the amendments in their revised form for conformance with the certified LUP, which includes six different segments. In recommending the customary one-year extension of processing time, our staff report indicated we'd likely bring the amendment back to the Commission for action much sooner than that. We indicated we were targeting the August meeting in the North Coast to provide for a local hearing and to provide sufficient time to develop the staff recommendation and, importantly, to coordinate with the county on our recommended suggested modifications. Since publication of the report, we've received a letter from the county planning director discussing how certification of the ordinance at the earliest possible meeting is of great importance to the county. The letter has been posted on the commission's website. After receiving the letter, we've looked closely at what we could do to try to schedule the hearing sooner than the August meeting. And after delegating some projects to other staff who are not working on this and mapping out the necessary steps involved in producing the recommendation, including coordinating with county staff on our suggested modifications, which is essential to narrowing issues and smoothing the commission's review of the project, we've determined that we could schedule the hearing for the commission's May meeting. I've discussed the schedule with the county planning director, and he's indicated that the county is in agreement, and he looks forward to our continued collaboration to accomplish the May hearing date. Although staff is indicating we'll bring this LCP amendment to hearing in May, we still recommend that the commission extend the deadline for the full year just to allow for uncertainty in the review process. Therefore, we're recommending that the commission extend the deadline for commission action as indicated in the staff report by 1 year. And the appropriate motion is found on page 2 of the staff report.
Thank you very much. Mr. Merrill, I do have a request to address the commission on this item from Jennifer Savage on behalf of Surfrider. Ms. Savage, did you wish to address the commission or just register support for the extension?
I would like to register support on behalf of Humboldt Bay.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Can I just, I'll just speak real quick.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks. Jennifer Savage, I am speaking on behalf of Humboldt Baykeeper and Friends of the Eel River today. Both of those are nonprofit organizations located in Humboldt County. Humboldt Baykeeper and Friends of the Eel River strongly support the staff recommendation to extend the time limit to act on the Humboldt County Local Coastal Program amendment for 1 year, or at the very least until the August hearing. To give the local community an opportunity to talk about this at the North Coast meeting. The county's implementation of the cannabis ordinances for inland areas has been controversial for a number of reasons, including impacts to biological resources, wetlands, riparian habitats, aesthetic impacts such as artificial lighting, and impacts to agricultural soils, since indoor cultivation in coastal areas will primarily involve concrete slab foundations. In addition, the redevelopment of former industrial sites has been poorly addressed by the county's inland ordinances, despite mitigation measures that were adopted to address potential soil and groundwater contamination that has the potential to be remobilized during construction and other ground-disturbing activities. The potential to degrade coastal resources is too great to rush forward with these changes without a local hearing, and we hope that you will agree that lessons from the implementation of the inland cannabis ordinances need to be fully incorporated with input from the affected communities. And on a personal note, as a 21-year resident of Humboldt County, I know very well how intertwined all things cannabis are with all things Humboldt, and I absolutely urge you to give the necessary time and allow the local community as much opportunity to weigh in as it takes to get this right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Savage. Anyone else present like to address the commission on this item? Hearing none, we will note that the hearing is closed on the question of the extension. We will bring it back to the commission and ask for a motion. Forgive me. I've neglected to ask for ex parte. Mr. Sundberg.
Yes, this morning at 7:30, I was on a group text with Supervisor Rex Bone and Planning Director John Ford. Said that they had been in contact with Mr. Merrill and said that they could, Mr. Merrill said that he could get the application in front of the commission in a few months. And they said that they decided to not come here today because they were satisfied with that answer. So that was it.
Thank you, sir. Then, anybody else? Mr. Howell? No? All right.
I do have a comment, too.
You have a comment? I apologize. Go right ahead.
Sorry. So I just want to say thank you to Bob Merrill for working with the county. And, you know, this has been a difficult issue. There's a lot of issues for the coast in cannabis. And from what I know, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, most of the issues have all been worked out, and it's pretty much ready to go except for administratively making it happen. And that's why you are pretty certain we can get it on the agenda in a couple months or 3 months. Is that correct?
Well, we certainly have worked out a number of the major issues. There's still some complexities and still some things to work out, which is why we need to do further coordination. But we've been working closely and well with the county.
So the request I had from the county this morning was to do a 3-month extension and not the 1 year. And I know this is, you know, we've got people in Humboldt who have invested millions of dollars in projects, and this keeps getting held up. So I understand where they're coming from with a sense of urgency because of, you know, many, many jobs and lots of money invested. So if it was 3 months, is that just out of the question for you, or?
Mr. Chairman, having a 3-month deadline creates issues because we need some flexibility in that. If, in fact, we get to a point where we have issues that we can't resolve and can't get it to hearing in 3 months. You know, we made a commitment here to May hearing, and we intend to meet that commitment. So, with many other LCP extensions, we typically ask for that 1 year to provide that flexibility for staff. So, and for the county too, so we can work things out. I don't want to bring something to you half baked. So, Thanks.
So what do you think about 6 months?
That half-baked was a joke, too.
Yeah.
Did you get that? No. No, I think it's, you know, I think we should just, my recommendation is to extend it out for a year, and we will live up to our commitments.
Commissioner Sundberg, just to clarify, I mean, if what I hear the executive director reporting is that the staff is going to make every effort to get this on for May, they're just requesting the time official extension be for a period of 1 year to allow some flexibility in the event of any unforeseen circumstances, but I think their intention is to get this on for May, and as the ED just said, they try to live up to their commitments, and of course you took a big risk saying that in public, Mr. Ainsworth, so now we're going to hold you to it, of course. So is that...
I think the county thinks that 9 months of leeway is a lot.
Noted. Is there any... Just anybody else want to comment, Commissioner?
Yeah. I'll play. So what's the controversy here? I guess maybe, I mean, I don't anticipate a huge... why can't it be even next month? I don't get it. Could you keep the commission apprised, perhaps, about why this can't come as soon as possible?
Sure, we can bring back reports to you on the status of the LCP amendment. We'd be more than happy to do that.
All right, thank you. Are there any other commissioners want to be recognized to address this extension question? All right, are we going to need, Commissioner Sundberg, should we request a roll call vote on the question of the extension, or are you comfortable supporting the recommendation for 1 year?
I would like, maybe I'll make a motion and let's see what happens.
All right, we'll entertain motions.
Okay.
Commissioner Sundberg?
I move that the commission extend the time limit to act on Part A, Part B, and Part C of County of Humboldt Local Coastal Program Amendment Number LCP-1-HUM-16-0075-2 for a period of 6 months.
Second.
It's moved by Commissioner Sundberg and seconded by Commissioner Howell to extend for 6 months. Do you like to speak further to the motion?
No, I think I've...
No. Mr. Howell, no? All right. Commissioner Loebno has a question.
This is for Director Ainsworth. If the time frame is limited to 6 months and you aren't able to reach some sort of conclusion, what happens then?
Well, if it was extended out for 6 months and we couldn't make that, we'd have to come to you and ask for an extension of that time, I think, out to the full year.
Hey, Mr. Ainsworth, if you forgive the interruption, if you could suspend, I'm watching the general counsel, and I am wondering whether procedurally, is there a requirement that the commission make the recommended motion? I'm not aware of such a requirement. There was not, the primary motion that was recommended by staff was not made.
Correct.
Or seconded. A different motion was made and seconded. I'm assuming you want to address that.
It can be done that way. I wanted to address it just to let people know that if they vote no to this motion, then that motion fails, but there was no original motion out there for the 1 year time extension, so there would not be any time extension at all. So I wanted commissioners to understand the implications of voting no to that motion as approval for 6 months only, rather than the requested motion from staff and then an amendment to 6 months. So that's the implication of having done it the way that Commissioner Sundberg did.
But through the chair to council, presumably if that motion failed, a subsequent motion could be made.
That's not my understanding.
Why not?
Because then that is the main motion out on the floor. And my understanding of Robert's rules is that then once that motion has failed, the commission has acted and that item is over.
I think this would be, I'm sorry to forgive the interruption from the chair, but this is probably a little too wonky procedurally for our public participants today, but it might be an item to request that the general counsel look to and report back.
at some future point so the Commission's clear on it procedurally. And for our purposes today, just in the event that that is absolutely certain, we might procedurally want to entertain, if the makers of the motion are willing to withdraw for the moment and get an underlying motion just as a backup on the record, and then we can take your basically either substitute or amending motion.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So would you withdraw just temporarily?
So you want me to withdraw the motion, make the motion, and then do an amending motion?
That's correct.
Okay. I'll withdraw the motion.
Is a second or consent to the withdrawal?
Whatever.
All right. All right. Mr. Sundberg, would you like to make the primary motion? Or would you request someone else to do that?
Go ahead.
Right. Commissioner Groom.
Mr. Chair, I move the Commission extend the time limit to act on Part A, Part B, Part C of County of Humboldt Local Coastal Program Amendment Number LCP-1-HUM-16-0075-2 for a period of 1 year and ask for a yes vote.
A second.
All right. Moved by Commissioner Groom, seconded by Commissioner Howell. At this point, any comment as to this motion?
Clearly, this is a priority. If we're trying to partner with our local elected officials, this should be a priority.
All right. Commissioner Levin had a question.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to get you started to answer my question. You didn't finish it. So.
No, I've been corrected. You know, we get one shot at this extension. So if you go out to 6 months, that's it. So we'd have to meet that deadline.
Okay.
Any other questions or Commissioner Brownsey?
Just real quickly, if there's a 6 months extension, does that include, what's the date that the extension would then cease? Would it include the August date in the event that it would include August? Our meeting date, yes.
Yes, it would take us to the August meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, for clarification, the main motion has been moved and seconded. Was there a desire to request a substitute motion, Commissioner Sundberg?
An amending motion.
Well, let's see if
it's
accepted.
An amending motion or a substitute motion?
Amending
motion, that's okay. I move that the Commission extend the time limit to act on Part A, B, C of County of Humboldt Local Coastal Program Amendment Number LCP-1-HUM-16-0075-2 for a period of 6 months.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Sundberg and seconded by Mr. Howell, again, on what we'll call an amending motion at this point.
Can I just say one more thing before you
begin? Yes, would you like to speak to your motion?
Yes, please. So I think this should work. This gives staff double the amount of time that they need and also gets them out to the August meeting that they said that they absolutely needed. So I think this would make the county happy knowing that there is some time certain, and we're working really hard on the 3 month. But if something happened, we would have the leeway to the August meeting.
Mr. Howell?
How can we not trust Executive Director Ainsworth to do this?
Commissioner Vargas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. This may seem really trivial to go from 6 months to a year to 9 months to 3 months. Everybody thinks that the cannabis industry is, you know, everybody's making tons of money, but there are real farmers out there that are struggling, particularly in the Emerald Triangle area, and they're all sitting after have heavily invested their time and their money on their projects and waiting for government regulations to sort themselves out. So every month that we delay is a burden on these small farmers. So let's be mindful about that. I really respect Commissioner Sundberg's efforts to move on this. I'll be supporting his amended motion.
Thank you. Any other deliberation on the amending motion? It's been moved, seconded, discussed. Ms. Miller, I imagine we would want to set up a roll call vote on the question of the amending motion.
Commissioner Amensada.
No.
Amensada, no. Commissioner Brownsey?
Just a quick question. Voting aye is supporting the 6 months.
Correct.
Okay. Aye.
Brownsey, yes. Commissioner Groom?
Yes.
Groom, yes. Commissioner Howell?
Aye.
Howell, yes. Commissioner Luebeno?
Yes.
Luebeno, yes. Commissioner Peskin?
Aye.
Peskin, yes. Commissioner Sundberg?
Aye.
Sundberg, yes. Commissioner Uranga?
Aye.
Uranga, yes. Commissioner Vargas?
Yes.
Vargas, yes. Chair Padilla?
Aye.
Padilla, yes. The vote is 9 yes, 1 no.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. The amending motion to extend the time for a period of 6 months is adopted. Thank you. Do we still need to take the main motion?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let me make sure I'm clear on this, because this is definitely a workshop item. Why in God's name would we take up the second motion for an extension of a year if the commission just ordered one of 6 months?
Yeah. So the main motion has now been amended to be 6 months. So now it's been amended to be what Commissioner Sundberg originally proposed.
My apologies. All right.
So we still need the vote on the main
motion.
We have
to do it again.
Thanks.
Because now is amended to include 6 months.
Exactly.
Gotcha. We do make this difficult. I will confess that. All right. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Uranga?
We had this situation yesterday, as you recall. If it's an amending motion and it passes, you don't need to vote again on the primary motion. However, if the amending motion basically changes the primary motion, then it is a substitute motion. But that's just a clarification. But the point is, I think that's important here. I think that at some time in the future, we need to have some kind of training or workshop on parliamentary procedure, Robert's Rules of Order, since you have it right there. That's great. So that we can be more clear on how we proceed with motions. Sometimes it could get very complicated, as you know, city councils, when we talk substitute motions and substitute to a substitute motion, and it just can get real complicated, and you were absolutely correct. I know the audience, especially those who are not familiar with Robert's Rules of Order, that this can be very procedural and complicated. So I think that perhaps a workshop on parliamentary procedure would be in order at this time. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. Is there any objection to unanimous approval of the now amended primary motion? Hearing none, it is approved for a period of 6 months. Thank you. Next item.
Okay, so that brings us to item 9A on the agenda. This is an application that's submitted by the Trinidad Civic Club as the follow-up to emergency permits granted both by the City of Trinidad and the Executive Director of the Commission for the previous relocation in January of 2018 of the iconic Trinidad Memorial Lighthouse and Bell. The Lighthouse and Bell were moved from their previous blufftop location at the intersection of Trinity and Edward Street in the City of Trinidad to a temporary location in the Trinidad Harbor at a site owned by the Trinidad Rancheria. The lighthouse was removed when an encroaching landslide began to threaten the lighthouse structure and posed a risk to not only the lighthouse but to sensitive cultural resources associated with the Churai Village site located downslope of the Civic Club property. The application seeks authorization to retain the lighthouse and bell in its new location for up to 4 years while the Civic Club plans for a permanent location. And the project also includes some work yet to be performed, including the removal of the lighthouse foundations and portions of a paved walkway from the former site. We're recommending approval of the application with conditions. As I will discuss more in a moment, the applicant is objecting to one of the recommended conditions. I first want to show you a few slides to quickly orient you to the project. Next slide, please. Slide 2 just shows the overall project vicinity and the location of the former blufftop site of the lighthouse as well as its new temporary location in the harbor. Next slide, please. Slide 3 shows you a little better view of the blufftop site on the right and then the harbor site, which is more to the left of the photo. Next slide, please. Slide 4 shows the relocation process going on in last January, and you can see the lighthouse and the bell separately being picked up by a massive crane and loaded onto a flatbed trailer for transport from the blufftop down to the harbor. Next slide, please. Slide 5 shows the blufftop site as it exists today with the lighthouse and bell removed. The remaining concrete foundation slabs shown in the photos, as well as a buried foundation for the bell, would be removed as part of this project. the stairway, the retaining wall, and a portion of the walkway at the foot of the stairs, which are shown in the photo to the left, would remain and are not proposed to be removed as part of this project. The Blufftop site is adjacent to culturally sensitive lands associated with the southernmost village within the Aboriginal territory of the Yurok people, known as Churai Village. Three tribal groups represent lineal descendants of the original occupants of the Churai Village, including two federally recognized tribes, the Yurok tribe and the Trinidad Rancheria, and a separate group called the Churai Ancestral Society. Due to the cultural sensitivities, the remaining memorial infrastructure will be removed using hand tools such as jackhammers and concrete saws rather than heavy equipment. And the project archaeologists and commission staff have actively coordinated with the representatives of the Yurok tribe, the Trinidad Rancheria, and the Churai Ancestral Society during the permitting process. Although no archaeological resources were found during the surveys performed during the relocation operation, staff is recommending a special condition that requires the applicant to comply with all recommendations and mitigation measures contained in the consulting archaeologist's report, which specify cultural monitoring requirements and establishes notification and significance testing protocols in the event of inadvertent discovery. Next slide, please. Slide 6 shows the Axel Lindgren Memorial Trail, which extends down from the Blufftop site to the beach below, following an historic trail route of the Yurok people. The trail will remain open for public access during the demolition and removal of the pads. Next slide, please. Slide 7 shows the relocated lighthouse in its current temporary location within the harbor. It's Trinidad Head in the background with the Trinidad Beach along the open ocean to the right. The Trinidad Pier and Marineways that extend into Trinidad Bay are out of view to the left of the photo. And the last slide, please. Slide 8 here shows a close-up view of the Memorial Lighthouse and Bell in their current temporary location. Staff is recommending approval of the development with 9 special conditions. As I noted at the beginning of the presentation, the applicant is objecting to 1 of the special conditions. The commission received correspondence, which has been posted on your website, from the Civic Club objecting to special condition 1, which is a condition requiring liability for costs and attorney fees. The applicant has indicated in its written correspondence that as a small nonprofit, it has no budget for potential legal fees and is therefore unable to accept the condition. In an additional letter that was received today and was distributed to the dais, the applicant indicates that it's withdrawing previous objections to Special Condition 7, the assumption of risk. So the only condition that's at issue is Condition 1, the attorney fees condition. We continue to recommend approval of that condition for the reasons detailed in the staff addendum. The addendum, I'll note, also presents various modifications to the staff report in response to comments that have been received from the Trinidad Rancheria requesting clarifications and corrections to certain cultural references that are contained in the staff report. We also include a number of corrections to typographical errors. So staff continues to recommend that the commission, upon completion of the public hearing, approve the coastal development permit with the special conditions and findings included in our recommendation of January 25th as modified by the changes recommended herein. And the motion to approve the permit is found on page 4. That concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex parte with respect to this item? Mr. Sundberg?
I did have an ex parte, but it's on file.
It's on file. Any other commissioners? All right. We do have a speaker slip on behalf of the applicant, Patty Fleschner. Is that correct? Welcome. And,
yes.
And also indicates you have materials to be presented to the commission as well as a presentation?
That's right. Mr. Merrill referred to our third revision.
How much time would you need, Ms. Fleschner?
Just probably under 15 minutes or under.
Okay, well, that's the amount, maximum 10. Amount we can allocate.
Okay.
So
under 10.
All right, 10 is great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, honorable commissioners and directors and staff. We thank you for considering our project. I'm Patty Fleschner. I'm a Memorial Lighthouse Preservation Chair for the Trinidad Civic Club in Trinidad, California. With me today are our co-presidents and photographer, Jan West, and Dana Hope are our co-presidents, and our Memorial Lighthouse Secretary, Linda Moran, and her husband, Joe Moran,
and our Trinidad Civic Club member, Shirley Leos. A week ago today, we emailed the commission and staff at the Arcata office a letter followed by a second letter in front of you, is the third one, and the final revision, which Mr. Merrill referred to, with supporting documents attached, which we will refer to later in our presentation. The Trinidad Civic Club is grateful to Mr. Merrill and Tamarad Geddick, the Arcata staff recommendation for approval with conditions of our permit, and for the commissioner's time to review the project description and recommendations. The club, as Mr. Merrill said, respectfully requests the removal of two special conditions concerning legal liability. That's Section 3, Number 1, Page 5, liability for costs and attorney's fees, and N, reimbursement of costs and fees on Page 28. Please disregard our request for exclusion of Special Condition 7. We're sorry for the confusion. We're not lawyers, and it took some time to absorb the staff report. The Trinidad Civic Club was founded in 1913. We're a small, nonprofit, all-volunteer community service organization. We're devoted to the civic improvement, stewardship of the Memorial Lighthouse, child welfare, education, and especially the promotion of harmonious community spirit. In 1949, the United States Coast Guard gave the Trinidad Civic Club its decommissioned Fourth Order Fresnel lens and the accompanying fog bell, which was installed on the Trinidad Head in 1898. So the Civic Club built the 1949 memorial in the picture to accommodate these precious historical artifacts. And It's not an exact replica, but a replica of the working navigational aid on Trinidad Head. The memorial site commemorates those lost at sea and those buried at sea. Affixed to the memorial lighthouse on the backside are the most recent engraved names of those lost at sea. There are approximately 250 individuals currently commemorated, and we honor these people buried and lost at sea at an annual ceremony in May near Memorial Day. Those lost at sea include the Coast Guard members, fishermen, pilots, surfers, and others. A portion of the World War II Danforth anchor is in this picture in the top, and the memorial plaque below reads, "In loving memory to those who perished at sea, they will forever live in our hearts." Not only is the Memorial Lighthouse a precious destination and icon for our community and those lost and buried at sea, but it's a landmark for the North Coast. Images of the lighthouse are featured by the Visitor Bureau, as seen above, as well as by countless other businesses and organizations and municipalities. It's all over the place in Humboldt County. And so what happened? Why did the Memorial Lighthouse have to be moved? Mr. Merrill went into some of that. The coastal erosion on the adjacent City of Trinidad property, this is not the Memorial Lighthouse site, this is city property where you see the erosion there. The lighthouse itself was not endangered. But it became apparent that the Memorial Lighthouse could be in jeopardy. And so at great expense, the Trinidad Civic Club hired SHN consulting geologists and engineers to monitor the ground movement and make recommendations. The heartbreaking decision was made to move the Memorial Lighthouse. A highly skilled, amazing crane operator from the Redding area lifted the Memorial Lighthouse and 20 tons and the historic bell. Two lowboys donated by the Big Lagoon Rancheria to transport the lighthouse and the fog bell to their temporary location on Trinidad Harbor, property owned by the Churai Heights Indian community of the Trinidad Rancheria, proved to be wonderful partners and supporters. the crane travel to the harbor area where it placed the Memorial Lighthouse on sand without a foundation. And you, Mr. Merrill, had a better picture. That's Trinidad Head in the background. The former site of the Memorial Lighthouse now stands empty. The Yurok people, including the Yurok tribe and the Churai Heights Indian community of the Trinidad Rancheria, have pledged to remove the concrete slabs and the post remnants of the fog bell supports, as Mr. Merrill described. Currently, the lighthouse sits on the edge of a parking lot in the harbor area. The Trinidad Civic Club has spent $80,000 to date on moving the lighthouse and seeking required permits. The club budget for this fiscal year has over a $10,000 deficit. We anticipate that the cost of creating a new memorial site may exceed $200,000 for a women's club of about 20 active members, most ranging in age from 50 to 90. I'm closer to the 90 than the 50. This is a huge commitment and responsibility. This is why we're concerned that our permit contains a liability condition to hold us accountable for potential legal costs. A civic club member very carefully researched 40 California Coastal Commission permits granted in Humboldt County between 2014 and 2018 and found that 26 nonprofits or single-family applicants were approved without liability conditions. And you can look at the attachment on the third revision of that letter. Hope that's clear. Of the 27 projects on the February 2019 agenda today and this week, there are 23 with no liability conditions. The Civic Club project is the only nonprofit application. The other three are businesses or governmental agencies. So see, and then that's also in the attachment. As referenced in the addendum to the staff report of the 1,000 permit, and that was the one a couple of days ago, and we apologize for any confusion of this. This has been a whirlwind week for us. As referenced in the addendum to the staff report of the 1,000 permit applications reviewed by the California Coastal Mission staff over the last 6 years, only 11 were from nonprofits. The commission waived liability for three nonprofits after no findings of substantial risk. The addendum cites a nonprofit that was held to the special condition, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, which we all love, which is a multi-million dollar organization. To compare the Trinidad Civic Club with a $10,000 to $12,000 annual budget to the multi-million dollar resources of the Monterey Bay Aquarium is an unfair comparison and offers no support to our project or to our community, Little Trinidad. In fact, it threatens the very existence of our 106-year-old organization. The Trinidad Civic Club is simply unable to accept the special condition. Taking on legal liability for the California Coastal Commission is an onerous demand, impossible to realistically perform. Costs for completing the emergency work outlined in the project description already have gone far beyond anything that our club could possibly have envisioned. There is no budget for potential legal fees. The Memorial Lighthouse is in limbo now until funds can be raised and permits obtained to move forward. We do have tremendous community support, which keeps us all going. We hope that we've deepened your understanding of the nature of the Civic Club Memorial Lighthouse project, the nonprofit status of our community service organization, and the very unique challenges faced in remaining faithful stewards of this beautiful icon and respectful of the loved ones commemorated at the memorial. We urge you to consider the Civic Club's special circumstances, including limited resources, as you deliberate this request. With the support of the community for preserving the iconic Trinidad Memorial Lighthouse and the generous cooperation of Churai Heights Indian community of the Trinidad Rancheria and the Yurok people, the project will be successfully completed. We're determined, and we thank the staff and you for listening to this long presentation, and we hope you love our pictures.
Thank you, thank you, Ms. Fletcher.
Thank you.
Shirley Laos?
I'll leave that up there.
Welcome, Ms. Laos. Your time will be limited to 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Shirley Laos. I'm the Governmental Affairs Coordinator and enrolled tribal member at Trinidad Rancheria, and I'm here today in support of the Trinidad Civic Club's application. The Rancheria has a positive and collaborative relationship with the Civic Club. Along with the Yurok Tribe, we are signatory to a Civic Club MOU, committing to work together to on the Lighthouse Project. Specifically on the Rancheria's end, as Bob mentioned, we are offering a permanent home on the Trinidad Rancheria Harbor properties. And because of our past work with the Civic Club, we've become aware of their financial constraints. And during the removal of the lighthouse, the Rancheria assisted financially. And we paid for services such as excavation, equipment, cultural monitoring, and various other services that they couldn't afford to pay on their own. So we support the Civic Club's request for the waiver of legal liability and that special condition. And I'd also like to thank Bob Merrill for his assistance and working with us in all of our dialogue in preparing for today's meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Joe Moran.
Hello, Commissioners and Chairman. Thank you for your time today. My name is Joe Moran. I'm a resident of the city of Trinidad. I own multiple businesses there. Have two children at the school. I live right above State Beach. Drive by the old former location of Lighthouse daily. It's a huge icon for our town, our community, our county. And I'm here today in support of this application. You know, Trinidad is, I think, technically the oldest and smallest city in the state of California. We have a few hundred residents. It's a very tight community. And groups like the Civic Club, which I am not a member, but I did drive down 6 hours to support, I think is integral to community. You know, there's no unity without you and I. So here in support of these ladies and their efforts and their request for the omission, how outstanding it may be, I think it's very relevant to bring up and look forward to your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else present would like to address the commission on this application? Seeing no one, are there closing comments from staff?
Yes, Mr. Chair. With regard to Special Condition 1, the liability for costs and attorney fees, staff has decided that we will remove the special condition from our recommendation. The attorney fees condition is usually recommended by staff in cases where there is a substantial risk of liability. As no one has appeared today in opposition to the project, and as no one has submitted comments opposed to the project, we think the risk of a successful lawsuit against the commission appears to be very low, and the condition is no longer needed. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Merrill. Did the applicant want to acknowledge that and say thank you,
Mr. Merrill.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, we will note that the public hearing on this item is closed, and we'll bring it back to the commission. Commissioner Sundberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Bob. I was saved me a lot of time here. I was ready to go. So, no, I appreciate that very much, and completely agree that, you know, the risk is very low. And then after seeing the list of others that have not had to have the liability clause, that makes complete sense, and I agree with staff. So I would like to move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit 1-18-0630 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Commissioner Sundberg, seconded by Commissioner Groom. Do either wish to further address your motion? Mr. Sundberg? Is there any commission? Commissioner Howell?
Just quickly, even if that condition wasn't removed, reading the letters and the information and everything that you've accomplished, I think you were more than capable of taking care of yourselves. So congratulations.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Any objection to unanimous approval? Hearing none, the motion carries and the resolution and findings are adopted. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that brings us to energy and ocean resources.
Yes, it does. Thank you. So that does take us to item 10 and the Deputy Director report for energy and federal consistency. And I don't have any items in this month's report that requires commission action. So we can go right to item 11, which is the consent calendar for energy and federal consistency. So as I reported earlier, we moved items 12A, 13A through C, and 14A through D to the consent calendar. And a couple of things regarding combined items 14A through D. These are the permit amendment applications by the Hog Island Oyster Company. First, there's an addendum. Well, actually, there's two addendum. The second is very short. The proposed modifications to the recommended special conditions are in response to comments by the applicant and EAC, the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin. And with the proposed changes in the addendum, we understand that EAC is now in full support of the staff recommendation and that the applicant also accepts the staff recommendation with the changes in the addendums. So on Wednesday, we received a letter from the applicant, which is posted online. And I just have one comment on that. So Hog Island disputes staff's conclusions that Hog Island has undertaken development not consistent with their existing permits. And we just strongly disagree with that. We believe that they have indeed carried out activities outside the scope of what the commission authorized and that there are violations here of unpermitted development. And we do explain this a bit more in the staff report. But here, with this recommendation, we believe we have worked out with the applicant how to both correct the violations and proceed with the expansion of their operations consistent with the Coastal Act. And I do want to thank Mr. Finger of Hog Island for working so closely with staff to get us to this point today, and I think that we are on a good path forward. I understand that you may have speaker slips for the consent calendar, but all are in support of the staff recommendations. And with that, Mr. Chair, we recommend that you approve all of these items on the consent calendar.
Thank you, Ms. Dittmer. Are there any ex parte with respect to any items on consent? Mr. Uranga?
Yeah, unrelated to that particular item, there's item 14E, which is the City of Long Beach, Colorado Lagoon restoration project. I had a ex parte.
We haven't called that yet.
Oh, you, that
thought,
one is not.
Oh, you said through, I thought you said through F, through E, I mean.
No speaker.
No.
It was through D?
Oh, did I mistakenly say E? I meant A through D.
So that's why I was saying that. Okay, never mind.
14D. I've got one. I'm sorry, Commissioner Peskin.
On Tuesday, February 5th at 10:18, I had a under 2-minute telephone call with Supervisor Dennis Redoni, wherein he supported staff's recommendation relative to items 14A through D.
Thank you. Any others? Okay, I do have some requests request to address the commission on items on consent, starting with item 13B from Alexandra DeVary, or forgive me if I mispronounce that, and Kieran Cower. They both indicate they are here only to respond to questions. Was there any desire on the part of either of you to put any comment in the record? The recommendation is to approve on consent. I do have a request also to address the commission on item 13B in opposition from Jennifer Savage. Ms. Savage? Okay, then that is withdrawn. With respect to items 14A through D, I have requests from Richard James, Morgan Patton, and Ashley Gibbs. My understanding is this is also in support or to respond to questions. Is that correct? And the same with John Finger and Eric Schlagenhoff. Did I get that right? I certainly hope I did. All right. Does anyone else present wish to address the commission on any of the items that are placed on consent? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Move the consent.
Moved and seconded. Is there any objection to unanimous approval? Hearing none, the consent calendar is adopted. Oh, I apologize. I didn't know you were wishing to be recognized. Commissioner Amanzada would like to make a comment.
Yeah, I just want to make a brief comment with respect to the Hog Island Oyster Company and the compromise reached by staff. I really appreciate it. You know, when I see the threats looming large of the potential for offshore oil drilling, I really value and appreciate this kind of sustainable use and industry of our coast. And so I really appreciate you making it work to facilitate the expansion and to have the buy-in of the environmental community. And I'd love to see more like this. So thank you.
Thank you. Next item.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chair. The last item of the day is item 14E, and I have a presentation for this one. This is an amendment to CDP 5-09-071 to allow the City of Long Beach to construct an open channel connecting Colorado Lagoon to Alamitos Bay. The next item, this item also includes a separate motion and resolution to authorize the Executive Director to become a signatory to a mitigation bank for the Colorado Lagoon. The CDP amendment before you would authorize the last phase of a multi-year effort by the city to clean up and restore Colorado Lagoon. The city is in agreement with the conditions of the amendment, and we are not aware of any opposition to this project. In fact, the project has widespread community support, as indicated by the many letters of support of the staff recommendation included in the correspondence. As a result, I will not go into any detail about the restoration work proposed by the city. I would, however, like to spend a few minutes going over the mitigation bank that the city is proposing for Colorado Lagoon. This is the first of several mitigation banks the commission is likely to see, so I would like to spend a few minutes walking you through how the bank is set up and how it will work. The purpose of setting up a mitigation bank is to provide a mechanism for the city to pay for the restoration work. The city would implement the proposed work and then sell mitigation credits to other entities looking to fulfill mitigation obligations. The bank was established consistent with the U.S. Army Corps mitigation rule to provide mitigation under the Corps' regulatory program, but was also designed to provide mitigation for Coastal Act impacts. For the past several years, staff has worked with scientists on an interagency review team, including staff from the EPA, NIMFS, Cal State Long Beach, the U.S. Army Corps, as well as with the city to develop the components of the bank. Today, I just want to spend a few minutes describing key components of the bank, including mitigation activities and type, service area, performance standards and monitoring, bank credits, and to address the question why the commission should become a signatory. The bank would provide credits for several types of restoration within the lagoon itself and within the new open channel connecting the lagoon to Alamitos Bay. Within the lagoon, the bank would include creation of up to 8.1 acres of new eelgrass habitat, shown here in yellow and purple, creation of about 1.9 acres of new tidal habitat along the shores of the lagoon, enhancement of 17.3 acres of existing tidal habitat throughout the lagoon from the full tidal connection. This does exclude required mitigation areas for the Naples Seawall Repair Project, the swimming beach area, and the footprints associated with the walk bridge and floating Christmas trees that are put out in the holidays. Within the open channel, the bank will include creation of about 3.4 acres of new tidal habitat, which excludes the footprint of a box culvert, two box culverts that go beneath the two roads, and associated riprap along the channel banks. A bank's service area describes the geographic area within which permitted impacts may be compensated through purchase of credits from a mitigation bank. For the Colorado Lagoon Mitigation Bank, that means that only projects within the boundary shown in yellow from Point Fermin to Bolsa Chica Wetlands would be eligible to use bank credits to satisfy mitigation requirements. For this bank, it is expected that the Port of Long Beach will purchase most of the available credits. I'm not going to go into detail regarding the performance standards and monitoring, but I do want to mention that post-construction, the bank must meet several interim and final performance standards or success criteria over a five-year monitoring period. These standards assess physical, biological, and water quality parameters and include absolute standards that require the bank to meet a specific target, as well as relative standards that require the bank to meet a target that is similar to a reference site. The monitoring plan for the first 5 years is designed to provide sufficient information to evaluate whether the bank is meeting its interim and final performance standards. Mitigation credits will be released for sale only after the five-year interim management period has concluded and all performance standards have been met. This is somewhat unusual for a bank developed under the U.S. Army Corps rule, which does allow for a scheduled release of credits at several milestones throughout the interim management period. However, waiting to release credits until after the bank has demonstrated compliance with its success criteria allows the city to maximize the amount of credits that they can sell from the bank. The bank will offer five types of mitigation credits listed here on the slide. The credit types range from establishment or creation of new habitat credits to rehabilitation and reestablishment, which is more akin to a restoration credit. The bank is expected to provide 22.5 credits in total. It is anticipated that most of the bank's credits will be purchased by the Port of Long Beach, as I mentioned earlier. As part of the BEI, which is the bank enabling instrument, the city developed guidelines for setting mitigation ratios for hypothetical future port projects. The ratios included in the guidelines range from 0.8 to 1 to 2.5 to 1. However, these ratios are based on hypothetical projects and are not binding to any regulatory agency, including the commission. When the time comes to approve purchase of credits to satisfy a mitigation requirement, the commission will need to examine the specific facts of a project and determine the mitigation ratio that is appropriate given those facts. Today, staff is seeking commission's authorization to become a signatory to the Colorado Lagoon Mitigation Bank. Becoming a signatory indicates that the commission accepts the various components of the bank, including the service area, performance criteria, monitoring plan, and crediting structure. Becoming a signatory does not, however, pre-authorize or pre-approve the use of the bank for future mitigation. As always, the commission will continue to make project-specific decisions about mitigation, including whether to approve the purchase of credits at this mitigation bank to fulfill mitigation requirements for a specific project. From staff's perspective, there are a few reasons to become a signatory to the bank. First, we have confidence that the bank will deliver high-quality habitat. The bank includes stringent performance criteria and a robust monitoring plan that holds the restoration project to a high ecological standard. Furthermore, the bank was developed in consultation with an interagency review team, a group of scientific experts from different agencies. The multi-agency collaboration led to a more thorough review of all bank components. And finally, becoming a signatory to the bank will save staff time in the future. Down the line, when the port or another entity applies for a CDP that requires mitigation, staff will not need to spend valuable time developing a mitigation project from scratch and then monitoring that project through several years of condition compliance. For the bank, that work will have already been done, and the bank will have had to demonstrate success. Thus, the purchase of mitigation credits becomes a relatively simple transaction, requiring a minimal amount of staff time and speeding up the overall processing time for applicable projects. Before I close, I want to let you know there is an addendum for this item. The main issue addressed in the addendum adds language to the bank enabling instrument, clarifying that if the city sells mitigation credits to satisfy a compensatory mitigation requirement, it assumes full responsibility for satisfying that requirement. Thus, if in the future the city is unable to fulfill that requirement at the bank, the city will be responsible for providing alternate equivalent mitigation. The motion and resolution for the CDP amendment can be found on page 4 of the staff report. However, the motion and resolution authorizing the mitigation bank were revised in the addendum to allow for some flexibility in the event that another agency makes non-substantive changes to the bank. So a clean version of the motion resolution for the bank authorization can be found within the box outline on page 2 of the addendum. So just there are two sets of motions and resolutions. One is found, the first one is found in the staff report on page 4. The second is found on the addendum on page 2. That concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Huckabridge. Are there ex partes with respect to this item? Mr. Uranga?
Before I start, I want to apologize. I heard A through E, but so I thought I was going to be able to get away with just having this motion pass and we're done, go home. But such is not the case. I just want to say that I did have an ex parte with Dave Perazzi, Christine Whitcraft, Heather Altman, my chief of staff, Senator Luna. We visited the Lagoon area and they explained the history of it, and it's and my ex parte is on file.
Thank you. Any other ex partes? Hearing none, I do have requests to address the commission on this item from the applicant, Joshua Hickman, on behalf of the City of Long Beach. And Mr. Hickman, welcome. Also, Mohsen Habib is part of an organized presentation as well on behalf of the city.
I'll be doing the complete
presentation. All right. How much time will you need?
No more than 5 minutes.
All right, got it. Thank you.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioners, and good morning. And thank you for the opportunity to give you a quick overview on the project. And thanks for the opportunity to come to this beautiful town here. This is the first time I've been here, and a great chance to come up and check out some other parts of the coast. So the coastal staff has done a fantastic job summarizing the project. So really, we've got a bunch of fun renderings and photos to show you what the project is to come. Thank you, staff, for preparing that presentation and explaining everything with a very, very good overview of the project. So, all right, so next slide. Oh. Here we go. So why the proposed project? The open channel and the mitigation bank are the final pieces of the restoration plan. So first bullet here, the planning began back in 2001 and has been ongoing since. So been processing the EIR, the LCD amendment, and we've been working, as staff had noted, over the last 5 years or so, working through this BEI. So now we're finally at the point where we've completed the first two phases of the project, which included the trash, low-flow diversion, interception systems, and the lagoon restoration itself. So now it's time to open that channel and bridge the gap, providing that full tidal spectrum to the lagoon itself. So this is a rendering of the proposed project. You can see that the water body to the north, that is the lagoon, and the water body to the south is Marine Stadium. That water body in the center is the open channel project, which will connect the two. In addition to the open channel itself, we're also going to restore the park area adjacent to it, creating some more active type uses within the area. So we'll have both passive and active recreational uses. So another rendering to show you the various habitat types within the open channel. Staff had gone into this pretty extensively with the various types. You can see all of them pictured here. Another rendering showing some passive recreation along the edge, but really wanted to highlight that this is a tremendous opportunity to bring wetlands and coastal wetlands to an urban setting, allowing for education and other opportunities within that urban environment. So very excited about that, which I know there'll be some speakers on. And overview of the habitat area itself. There are 22.5 acres that are being restored, 8 acres of which, shown in the blue, contain eelgrass habitat. And then there is some additional areas that are being restored outside of the bank, upland buffer type zones, to provide even more habitat and more restoration to the area. So what we're asking for today, we're asking for you to support the BEI and approve the open channel project. We feel that this is going to provide a tremendous coastal wetland habitat in that urban environment, great educational and public access opportunities, and we've had extensive community involvement and public support throughout. I think there was over 49 different letters of support, and we'd like to think that the community has been involved in all aspects of the project. So thank you for your time this morning, and appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. I also have a request to address the commission from David Perazzi, Friends of Colorado Lagoon.
And just one more note, we do have the full project team here to answer any questions that you guys may have, so feel free to
Thank you, Mr. Plurasi. And is Ms. Altman part of your presentation as well?
Yes, she is.
All right. Would 6 minutes suffice?
Yes, it will.
All right. Thank you.
My name is Dave Perazzi, and I serve on the board of Friends of Colorado Lagoon. I'm joined by Heather Altman, who is our vice president. Staff's report and the city's report have covered a lot of what we wanted to say, and given the position on the agenda, I don't think we're going to repeat a lot of that, so we will definitely keep our comments short. I did want to reiterate, though, about public support, the community support for this project. The final step of our restoration that was called out by a restoration feasibility study nearly 20 years ago was creation or recreation of the open waterway that historically connected the lagoon to the rest of the bay and to the ocean. We, as an organization, as a community organization, are asked frequently by the community when this open waterway is going to be completed. It was something that was very popular with the public when it was originally included in the restoration feasibility study, and they haven't forgotten. In the week prior to this hearing, our organization, Friends of Colorado Lagoon, were copied on 50 letters of support. Many of those letters include personal connections to the lagoon, families that use that lagoon as open space, many people that learned how to swim in the lagoon. There really is a strong place in the Long Beach and local community's heart for this Colorado lagoon. This project not only restores vital connection and tidal circulation to the lagoon, but it also restores many acres of habitat and open space for people and wildlife. The Friends of Colorado Lagoon respectfully ask that you approve the permit and vote to allow the Coastal Commission Executive Director to become a signatory to this lagoon mitigation bank. And I'd just like to close my comments by saying that reconnecting this lagoon to the rest of Alamitos Bay and to the ocean is as much about restoring the community's faith in the lagoon and in our institutions as it is about restoring tidal circulation, and both will benefit greatly with your approval. Thank you, and Ms. Altman has her comments.
Hello, my name is Heather Altman. Vice President of Friends of Colorado Lagoon. I'd like to thank you for your time and staff's time, coastal staff, city staff. It's been a slog, long slog, and we're here and we're very thrilled to be supportive of this project. It's really very hard to overstate how truly bad the condition of this lagoon was even 20 years ago. It smelled, it was contaminated, it was ugly. It was not something to be proud of, and that is no longer the case. The ongoing restoration efforts have really improved the lagoon greatly. FOCAL has worked hard to build a culture of stewardship around this lagoon. It has kind of morphed into this beloved community resource that we're very proud to be a part of. We have, as trying to get community buy-in and community stewardship, we have held over 800 community-based events at this lagoon. We have had over 4,000 volunteers participating in our programming. That included just people in the community, people from Cal State Long Beach, people from the Port of Long Beach. Everyone just really dug into this. Our efforts had great success. We have removed over 50,000 pounds of non-native vegetation, which is kind of disgusting when you think about it. 5,000 pounds of trash have been removed, and our volunteers have planted over 18,000 individual native plant species. FOCAL also has a thriving education program, and we have worked to bring over 8,000 students out to the lagoon. So this really is a very important community resource. We are looking forward to the implementation of the open channel because we really think it's an opportunity for us to expand our programming into this new area, and it will better help us demonstrate the connection of the lagoon to the greater watershed. So again, thank you for your time, and FOCAL is very supportive of this item, and we hope it is passed today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is anyone else present would like to address the commission on the question of this permit amendment? Seeing no one come forward, are there closing comments from staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to thank the City of Long Beach and their staff and all the local stakeholders to bring this project over the finish line. And I really want to thank Dr. Hucklebridge because for her great work on this project, because it was really complicated, particularly the banking instrument, which took many years to develop and refine with all of our agency partners. When I talk about good, efficient government that leads to good outcomes, this is it. This is the example of that, because it will streamline the process at the end when we're dealing with mitigation requirements at the Port of Long Beach. So I'm really excited about this project and it coming to a great outcome. So thank you.
Thank you. We'll note that the hearing and testimony is closed. We'll bring it back to the Commission for questions and action. Mr. Urunga.
Yes, I move that the Commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit number 5-09-071-A3 pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommended yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Urunga, seconded by Commissioner Amenzada. Does a mover or seconder want to speak to the motion?
There's a second motion, if I could speak after the second one.
All right, did you want to take them both at once or take them one at a time? That's what my intention was. All right. Okay. Is there any objection to did you want to speak to the first motion, Mr. Urunga?
Basically, I want to thank the Friends of the Colorado Lagoon for their tireless work on getting this fixed. It's a win-win for the city. It's a win-win for the neighborhood. It's a win-win for the lagoon and for the protection of the Esha and also the mitigation that is going to be taking place. I think it's a wonderful project, and I know that got some gray hair over it over the 20 years that you've been working on this. So I want to congratulate you on great work, and that's a big benefit to the City of Long Beach.
Thank you. Commissioner Amenzada?
Yeah, I love this project for all the reasons that staff and Commissioner Urunga and the speakers described. It's innovative. It's forward-looking. It streamlines processes, and I hope that we see more of these up and down the coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any unanimous objection to unanimous approval of the first motion? Did I say unanimous objection? We're not tired.
Unanimous.
Hearing none, the motion carries and the resolution and the findings are adopted. There is a second motion, and again, per the staff, it is found in the addendum to the report, looks like on page 2 in a box. Mr. Urunga?
I move that the Commission authorize the Executive Director to become a signatory to the Colorado Lagoon Mitigation Bank in a form and content substantially in conformance with that described in and attached as Appendix B to the staff report, but the changes to page 18 as described in and attached to the addendum, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
I hope I read that correctly.
Is that correct? Did we get that one right?
Okay.
All right. And would you like to speak to this motion?
It's the same as last time.
Commissioner Amenzada, any objection to unanimous approval? Hearing none, the motion carries, and the resolution is adopted. And that would conclude that item. And congratulations. And I believe that is a wrap, and we will adjourn to our meeting March 6th through the 8th in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.